Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And it's hosted by me, Kyle Schoenewill, and my friend, Robbie Earl. Robbie, we've made it through the Friends from Work, the Falcon and the Winter Soldier Mega Week.
Yes.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how happy were you with Mega Week?
Oh, man. I mean... I'm gonna have to go with 11, right? I mean, I don't know what else I can say.
It was, okay.
It was all so right. No, it really was so fun. It was such a great opportunity to just get to spend some more time with our folks out there, and I thought that, I mean, we had the AMA on Tuesday, which was a ton of fun. We had questions all over the place, and way more than we could get to, and then. Of course, the Thursday episode with Desmond, who I'm so sad is no longer with us in the MCU.
Rest in peace,
man. Because that was such a fun episode, and I mean, you know, I thought that he had some pretty key moments there in the finale that we'll talk about here in a moment.
By the way, if you didn't catch the episode there, it's still worth listening to. I would go back and listen to it. Even though he is dead.
Oh, for sure. No, I mean, well, and I mean, what we talked about there, his take just on Captain America as a symbol, which is especially interesting since he is not originally from America, talking about him growing up with that being such an inspiration for him, I think was kind of a fascinating conversation. But then, yeah, for it to all culminate in last night's kind of group viewing of the finale and the live stream after. It was just a ton of fun. And it's sort of what I always want these moments to feel like, whether it's kind of a movie or the finale of a show like this. Like, I love when it can be kind of a communal event.
The only thing we need to change about this is that we are the worst Instagram live team, technical-wise,
man,
in the history of podcasts.
Yep.
What in the world? Why are we cursed with Instagram Live? If you've been listening to our podcast for years now, you know that these have not been the biggest success for us as far as getting in the same room and actually talking. Yeah. What? Okay. So like last night, if you go back and watch that video, I couldn't join Robbie, and all it was showing on my screen was your screen was black and I heard nothing. So I'm just staring at the camera waiting for it to connect. Right. Even I took it up to my wife to be like, can I use your phone? Like, what's going on? And then I find out later that you were seeing me that whole time.
No. Well, yeah. So I couldn't see you, but our listeners could see you because everyone was saying like they could see because you had the baby on, right?
Well, Annika was just throwing Violet in front of the camera because we couldn't see anything to be funny. And then later I was like, wait, when I would hit stop and give up, it would show that I was there. And I was like, wait.
Man. Well, what? And then I tried to get on. You got on. Then I tried to get on through my account, which didn't work. So then I had to get on through Candace's account. And she told me afterwards that she lost a follower during our live stream.
Somebody was like, nope.
Someone was like, oh, Candace is on. I wonder what. Oh, no, absolutely not.
Or like, why am I following Candace doing this stuff? Who is that? Well, sorry to that one follower, but we did get it figured out. I think it's just our phones being dumb. But once we got it figured out, I love doing those.
Yeah.
Just to get real-time feedback from you guys. So I want to mix more of those in. But until I get some of the technical stuff figured out, we'll have to maybe just rein them in a little bit. But no, to all you guys that stayed and interacted with us, thank you. That was so much fun. This entire series has been a blast to cover. It's kind of sad that here we are. It's over now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think we said this when this show started. It's just so weird because this is the one that for the longest time, like I think whenever we started the podcast in like fall of 2019, this was the next thing after Black Widow. So it was going to be the start of the Disney Plus thing. So it just felt like it's been building to that one in particular for so long. And with it being six episodes, it's just, it was over before you knew it.
Okay. Few housekeeping things really quickly. If you want to stay in touch with us in the ways that we're talking about, like not missing these live events, follow us on social media at the FFW podcast. That is the best way besides this podcast that Robbie and I know to communicate with you guys when we have these ideas and whatnot. So at the FFW podcast, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, wherever. Also, we have a website, theffwpodcast.com, where you can message us through there. And lastly, don't forget to rate, review, subscribe, follow to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, etc. And that interview we were talking about with Desmond is on our YouTube in video form if that is something you are into. So go check that out.
And also, we had some folks ask about whether the live stream was recorded or going to be recorded, and it was. So if you do find us on Instagram, if you're not already there, if you go to our profile and then look for the videos there that we have saved, they will be the top ones.
And it's two videos because we had to restart because we couldn't figure out the tech stuff. And if you see in my, me and my baby and stuff, don't panic. We get to the content after that. So we don't have any leftovers because we did all of our leftovers pre the finale on Thursday.
Right. But I do think we should address at least one piece of news before we jump in.
Love it.
Which is, you know, Kyle and I both try really hard to stay off of all social media on Fridays, more so even than, you know, before we were doing the podcast, because now it's cool. So many of you guys listen and first thing start messaging us, but often we don't have the chance to watch until later in the day. But that also means that we found out about this next piece of news as we were doing the live stream last night.
Oh, true.
But it has now been reported and I believe confirmed that Marvel Studios has greenlit a Captain America 4, or, you know, a fourth Captain America film starring Anthony Mackie as Sam Wilson. And that film will be written, I believe, by Malcolm Spellman, who is the creator of Falcon Winter Soldier, and also by the writer of episode 5, who we talked about is Daylon Muson, who, again, I have no idea how to say that name, and no one corrected me over the past week, so I'm still out here kind of stranded. But to me, one, that's super exciting, and we'll kind of talk about the events in the finale leading up to that. But it's also really exciting because I really enjoyed episode 5 so much, like we talked about, and I thought the writing there was maybe as good as it's been in this entire show. So that seems like kind of a great team to be on board for that project.
No doubt. I can't wait for the film itself. Captain America 4, obviously now with Sam Wilson and kind of where that goes from there. And honestly, we talked about this on the live stream the other night. I'm fascinated to see some of these threads that were left dangling out there. Like, how long is it going to take for us to get some answers on some of those things? Because we started going through the movies. We're like, I don't know if Spider-Man's going to talk about the U.S. agent, for example, or Zemo or whatever. And then it's like, well, is Doctor Strange 2 going to? Probably not. Thor 4, probably not. Guardians 3, probably not. Right. So it might not be until this movie, Captain America 4, that we get some answers on some things, which would just be fascinating. And again, my Marvel timeline is just all thrown off because we used to only get 3 to maybe 4 movies in a year. And that didn't feel that strange because that was already so many films from one studio to get in a year. But now that we've been spoiled with like 12 total weeks or what, even more, 15 total weeks of content already this year, it's going to feel like such long droughts before we get answers on things, whereas it used to just be totally commonplace.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be really curious. We talked the last episode about kind of the rewatch order and how this stuff is going to affect it. I think we're going to have to get some distance from, I think, this year in particular, because I think these are the films and the shows that are going to be most focused on the immediate aftermath of Endgame. And then I imagine that kind of as we get more into, especially once we kind of are through Thor and Doctor Strange, we'll maybe be able to kind of sit back and see where all this falls and what threads are going where and what's leading to what. But yeah, it is hard. There's like, and I don't, you know, it's hard to say where Loki is going to fall, and it's hard to say where the Eternals is going to fall in.
That's fascinating, because my gut tells me that Loki, in a way, from what we've seen, is still going to kind of be reflecting on events from Endgame. And then let's say we fast forward to Thor 4 or Guardians 3, they're at least going to start, I think, with showing us what happened to them post Endgame. You know what I mean? Before we fully are moving on from it, it might be 2-3 years, which is what we wanted. Yeah. It's what we wanted.
No, totally. And I mean, you know, even Doctor Strange is, to the extent it's connected to WandaVision, likely going to be like pretty directly in the aftermath. So, yeah, I think the big question I have on that front, and then we can get into it, is with Loki. Like if it seems as though you can make the case that Loki, based on like the trailer, would start, I mean, literally the instant after he uses the Tesseract in Endgame, which would put it chronologically ahead of even WandaVision. Of course, we don't know what's going to play out, if there are going to be, you know, it might get into kind of a Doctor Strange movie situation where parts of it take place right after that, parts of it take place way down the road. But yeah, it is kind of an interesting and really fun puzzle for us to all kind of be working through together. But enough of that. Let's get into the star of the hour, the final episode of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. The episode is titled One World, One People. As always, this episode was directed by Kerry Skoglund. Again, I have really enjoyed the sort of consistency and tone that keeping these same directors has given us. And it was written by Malcolm Spellman, who we just talked about as the show creator, and I think who wrote the premiere as well. And Joseph Sawyer. And cast-wise, I don't think we had any new additions, but we had everyone show up that's kind of been with us through this whole show. And in that sense, though there were some dangling threads, I do think that we got to kind of get a little bit of resolution on most of the characters that we've been following here. So that's kind of what I was thinking we would do for this episode, Kyle. I was thinking we would maybe, rather than going chronologically, sort of look at what this episode did in relation to each of these stories that we've been following along with for the past 6 weeks.
Yes, I was going to say that too. And I want to add that my vision for this finale episode is to kind of review it a little bit more and cover the main characters that we grew to love and like what happened to them. And I think it's good to get into some of the big picture stuff of where does this leave us and what's going to happen with Marvel. But I think in a couple of weeks when we come back to do our like reflection episode, that's when we can kind of talk about the MCU as a whole. And that's when we'll give our ranking, which I know a ton of you guys always ask about where we think this will sit. Give us a little more time to process where it sits before we rank it, okay? So let's keep this focused on the finale. That's my vision. Let's do it.
No, I love that. And I think, you know, we didn't have the luxury with WandaVision of sitting with it for a bit, but I think that this show is dealing with some like weightier themes and warrants it, so I'm excited about that.
Okay, so let's start with the Flag Smashers then, since that's the first group of people that we see, but also I think let's save our big magic working up towards Sam and Bucky later, okay?
We'll kind of work our way there.
I was kind of mixed in general on a few things in this episode, and I've had a little more time to process it.
Mm-hmm.
I still very much enjoyed it, and I got a chance to watch it two times, like we always do before I do this. Mm-hmm. And the second time kind of made a few of the Flag Smasher questions I had more clear, which is good. The first time I watched it, I was a little bit wondering, like, am I losing? Is this getting a little muddled to where I'm losing their motivation?
Hmm.
Like, I really enjoyed that Carly was starting to go a little further than a lot of the Flag Smashers were willing to go. And I liked that dynamic. And they kind of played into that a little bit more here. Remember when she says one world and they don't answer with one people?
Right.
I liked the hints we were getting at that. But, like, I was a little bit confused what her ultimate plan was. And then the second viewing helped clear some of that up.
Yeah, I think some of the reactions I've seen online, that seems to be a frequent question, is kind of what were the Flag Smashers actually after?
So she wanted to break them out of the meeting, not keep them in, so that they could put them in the vehicles, take them elsewhere, hold them as hostage and hold them for ransom, and the ransom being, we're not going to release them unless you say you're not going to vote on this bill or whatever.
Yeah, I think that's right.
That's my understanding on the second watch.
And then I think the turn comes, and the moment you're talking about when they don't all answer is whenever she says, well, you know, if we have to kill them, we have to kill them. And that's where I think everyone's like, oh, I don't know if we're fully on board with this. And I think that's where, you know, for better or for worse, and I think this is maybe where people have mixed reactions, Carly really enters kind of full-on villain territory because she's sort of lost the forest for the trees a little bit, or the trees for the forest, I guess, because she's now, like, no longer, it seems as though, like, the overarching goal, which would seem to be about kind of preservation
equality
of,
and-
yeah, like preservation of life and kind of like a global community, like that is not really in keeping with the idea of now actually capturing and murdering people to get what you want. Like there's no world in which doing that really can ultimately result in an actual peace. Like you can't achieve, I mean, it's an interesting question.
However, I don't fault her for thinking that they won't respond unless she does something major, is what she's really thinking.
Sure.
And that's not wrong, per se. Sorry,
well,
it's immoral, but I'm saying she may not be incorrect.
Right, right. I mean, and I think that that's what makes the final speech with Sam so poignant, and we'll get to that soon. But yeah, I think I didn't feel as much of the issues that folks have raised with the Flag Smashers because I think Erin Kellyman, her performance carried a lot of that. I thought that we got a really satisfying, to me, final like battle scene, fight scene, whatever you want to call it, between the various Flag Smashers and the protagonists. And I think that final moment with Carly and Sharon and Batroc was also pretty great, which is maybe something that we can talk more about here for a second, even as we're getting sort of beyond the Flag Smashers into those two characters I just mentioned.
Well, and you know what's an interesting dynamic I just thought of is when Sam does give that speech, in a way, Carly did ultimately get what she wanted. Like,
right.
I was thinking about once Carly died and a few of the main Flag Smashers died, what do all those other people that stood up in the park, remember that? Like, what are they thinking? Is the movement just over because the head was taken out? But then I thought, well, maybe the movement's over because they actually got what they wanted, but via Sam instead of via Carly, really.
Right.
Although still kind of with Carly's like martyr type death being a catalyst for that. So in that way, I wasn't bothered by quote unquote full blown villain territory. Does that make sense? Because she still kind of ultimately did get her goals achieved via the good guy helping her in a way.
Well, And which is part of the tragedy, right? Because Sam was always trying to do that. I mean, he even said in that conversation in episode 4 that he agreed with her mission, just not the way she was going about it. And it's sad to realize that, like, yeah, like had you know, Walker not escalated things, had things not gone the way they did, it didn't have to end that way. But yeah, to your point, it reminds me a lot of Killmonger and the way, his goal was in a lot, I mean, not just understandable, it was kind of like, right. I mean, I think T'Challa ultimately takes up that goal. He just rejects the way in which Killmonger was trying to go about it through violence. But ultimately Killmonger, through his death, kind of achieves the opening of Wakanda. And yeah, it's really similar, I think, to what happens here with Carly and Sam.
So another interesting thought. You brought up Sharon, you brought up Batroc.
Mm-hmm.
I actually left the episode feeling like, for our main characters, I loved it. Like for Sam, for Buck, for John Walker, I really enjoyed it. And we'll get to that a little bit later. And even for Carly, I think. But I felt like when it came to like the rest of the Flag Smashers, and now in this case, Sharon, I was more like you. I was kind of like, meh.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's weird. I was the one that last week said, I don't think I would mind the reveal of her being the power broker.
Uh-huh.
And you were like, I would mind it. And then we talked last night and on the live stream, and you're like, I didn't mind it. And I was the one that was like, it was kind of meh.
Right.
We kind of flip-flopped there a little
bit. Yeah. Well,
what did you think of Sharon in general here?
Okay. So I had a sense really from the first time we see her that it was heading in that direction. And so initially I was a little disappointed by that because when she uses, like, first off, the fact that she's here, was already kind of suspicious. And then the fact that she's then, like, the way she kills that guy with the mercury gas is, like, so brutal.
Yeah.
And, like, beyond anything, you know, even, like, it's just not something that Sam and Bucky would do. And they're not, you know, seeing that happen. I think what made it interesting to me is, on the one hand, I'm like, oh, man, we're definitely heading towards that. And my biggest fear, like what I talked about last week, was that, well, it all seems to be pointing in that direction. So now if they're just like, yeah, it's her, then it feels like this has all been kind of for nothing. The reason,
right, but the cool twist, yeah.
That's the thing. The reason why that wasn't the case for me is there was a reveal to us, but not to Sam or Bucky or really anyone else except for Carly. Well, Carly already
and
knew,
so I mean,
it was really just to us. Yeah, so it was like, I think it's actually creating a really interesting situation now where we have this dramatic irony component, which isn't something that's really been a big part of the MCU. Like this idea of a character that we all know is bad on some level, or at least not who she says she is, but that no one else does. And so I think that just creates all sorts of interesting dynamics within those characters and within the MCU writ large, because to me, I think what that did is provide a path for what you and I have kind of talked about, like a villain that lingers in the background, or even if you don't want to call her a villain per se, someone with like questionable motives that's now, you know, at the end of the episode, we see her, I assume when he's talking about her getting her former position, that's within the CIA. So she's like now deep in the US government and who knows what else.
While I agree with all of that, I think where I say I'm just a little meh on it is, one, I don't know that I wanted that villain that lingers on to be Sharon. Like that to me,
yeah.
Like, and then I think I come back to, it feels a little bit of a forced twist to have this character fall that far, so hard, so fast. This is Aunt Peggy's niece. We're talking Aunt Peggy and a love interest of Captain America for a little while. And I know stuff has gone wrong, but to me, it was a little bit more believable when she was operating in Madripoor. And it's like, okay, she's just trying to make her living because she's banned from the United States. That makes sense. But to now go full circle where it's like, She's back in the United States and so angry or mad or evil or whatever that she's manipulating the government to get her job back to then work from the inside of the United States. I'm like, wow. Yeah. I just wonder if I'm a little mad on it because it seems like for Sharon, that seems to not fit that well. And we don't have to get into it much more than that. I can a little bit agree just disagree there. A little.
Well, just two things to leave it with. On the one hand, I think it's important to note that we don't know, and that's why I keep saying she's not necessarily a villain, because we don't know how evil her intentions really are and how, like, yes, we've seen
Well, she's clearly anti the system.
Yeah, but you know, what's interesting is that the conversation that she's having there with Carly could either be her manipulating Carly, or it could on some level be true when she's saying, look, like, you know, we were kind of trying to work together to make a better world, and you left. And you could see that she just, I mean, she has been hurt by the government, even though she was always trying to do the right thing. And you could see that, yeah, like after all this time, she does just believe that she has to kind of take this down from the inside somehow. And maybe in that sense, she's not so much evil as just like motivated against the system, like you're saying. And we'll just have to see. On the other hand, I think what you're saying is why some folks are raising the possibility of her being another Skrull. And I think that is a very interesting idea to me as someone who does really enjoy that Secret Invasion event and has read kind of all the issues there, because there's this idea that you have people that get really high up and really deep into these different organizations, be them the Avengers or SHIELD or whatever, and then once they're there, use that to kind of start taking things apart. And I think she would be kind of the prime candidate, right? Like if you were able to take, like, abduct Sharon at some point, and
because of what I'm saying,
right? Exactly. And then that's why it's like, wow. Well, because in some ways, like, I remember we talked about this with Far From Home. People are like, that's not really what Fury would act like in that situation. And then at the end, it's like, oh, well, yeah, it's not Fury. And I think that it could be that in a darker way. And I think we don't have anything to go on now, but that's something that I would be very interested in.
Sure. As an isolated series, as an isolated episode, she in particular just doesn't quite do it for me. That, like, it's just a little, I didn't find myself emotionally charged when she's on screen. And right. It brought up an interesting thought for me, because a lot of people had similar reservations about the WandaVision finale, about how there was so much fun, creative uniqueness in the first 8 episodes, and then the finale felt a little bit rushed, and like there's actually witches flying around, and it kind of just became a little wild. I never really was bothered by that at all. I mean, I see what people are saying, but I still got this moment of the Scarlet Witch reveal that gave me like massive chills. Like, I didn't get anything here, like not to that degree. And then that episode, we act like it was so different, but there'd already been witches and weird stuff being hinted at the whole time. And then when you get to the finale, I know some of the action looks a little wonky and whatever, but without the finale, we would have never gotten the walk back to the house, the goodbye to the children, and then ultimately the goodbye to Vision, and then her like snapping out of Westview. Like, that all was in the finale, and that was incredible. Like, that moved me emotionally. Those were some of my favorite parts. Mm-hmm. What's interesting is I felt like this episode had a little less concerns in that way, and yet I don't know that I was ever moved to the same degree. And the closest time I was moved to that degree emotionally, and we can jump here now, was actually with the resolution of Isaiah Bradley's character. First of all, I felt like Carl Lumbly has done an incredible job in this small role he has.
Absolutely.
Very well acted, very believable in his reactions and in his emotions. And to get that resolution for him, even if it was through a trope of watching it on television, the speech, it was cool. And then if they just left it there, I'd been like, okay, that's cool. But to then have Sam go back, to then explain it to him in the most real good feeling dialogue way I felt like in that scene. But then the cherry on top being that he takes him to the Smithsonian and right. there's his statue. I was genuinely moved by that part. So that, like, to the same degree that I felt like personally the Flag Smasher storyline and Sharon's storyline were kind of meh, now I want to move on to, like I said, I felt like it did hit it out of the ballpark for Isaiah Bradley.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that while it's a small role in terms of screen time and the amount of script real estate, I think that it's a big role in terms of impact. Like it Isaiah's shadow ends up kind of falling across a lot of this show in a really cool way. And I just want to take a second and say, without getting too big picture here, like I did not, you know, I hadn't read the Truth Red, White, and Black comic that we've talked about some prior to this. I was vaguely aware of Isaiah mostly through Eli, who, you know, we didn't get much follow-up on here, so that's something that we'll kind of have to keep an eye out for. But, you know, having read a lot of the Captain America, Sam Wilson stuff in the comics, I wouldn't have expected those to interweave so perfectly. But it really does. I mean, it makes sense, like, once I step back. But, man, like, that whole part of the story wound up being, I agree, the most powerful thing and the thing that gave me chills the most, especially in this final episode. And they found
a way to get Isaiah back in without it feeling forced. Like, we had asked,
yeah,
are they going to get back to Isaiah at all? And they did two more times. And it wasn't forced. It felt great.
I appreciate the fact that it wasn't this total about turn where suddenly Isaiah is a totally different person and he's no longer scarred and doesn't have the beliefs that he laid out in the prior episode when he was saying, you know, there can't be a black Captain America and who would ever want to be. I like that he seems consistent, but that, like, Sam rises to the occasion in such a way that it does impress Isaiah, and Isaiah realizes,
yes,
you know, like it was just,
I love Sam's response when he goes, oh, so a black Captain America, huh? You're damn right. I love right. that Sam now has changed his tune enough that he says that.
Right. Yeah. I thought that was super powerful and does kind of, in some ways, that the comic ends, I think I hinted at this, with Steve Rogers finding Isaiah and they sort of have a moment. And it felt like this was very much a version of that, where he's obviously not with Steve Rogers, but he's now kind of side by side with Steve Rogers in that Smithsonian exhibit. And he's there with the current Captain America. And yeah, I love that.
Let me just reiterate one thing, because you just said such a good word. You're so right. He didn't full 180 his character and be like, oh, Sam, you did it. It's amazing. I love it so much. He still is hesitant to it. But then to just get that Smithsonian exhibit closure,
right,
means more than just the statue, right? That's his legacy now that is different. He no longer has to, quote unquote, hide mm-hmm. in society, you know? So that would be that moving for him. And that didn't feel forced. So I loved that as well. Another character that I like this finale for, and I think this is controversial, was John Walker. Yeah. And I have a couple reasons why. This is controversial, I think, because I think some people were like, okay, what?
And it's on the total opposite end of the spectrum from Isaiah.
Right. So a couple interesting dynamics here. It is interesting that John Walker now is just walking through the streets and helping without ramifications. Because he just said, you know, like last episode, we found out he can't take up the shield again, can't act like Captain America, and yet here he is walking and fighting. But I kind of liked the twist, if you will. Like, I was pretty sure that John Walker was going to come back for vengeance and either die or get his butt kicked trying to just do something horrible for Hoskins' sake, and that was the end of it.
Hmm.
And I kind of liked the twist of, like, he has that moment to choose to do the right thing or not, like chase Carly, which is his own personal vengeance, or save this vehicle going down.
Right.
And John Walker chose to save the vehicle going down and then chose to, like, listen to Sam's speech instead of interject and say, I'm Captain America, or he doesn't deserve it. Like, it seems like he's kind of having a character swing in that way. And I have a caveat there, but I like that that felt a little bit different because they were setting up that he was going to be so bad. You follow me?
Yeah. Yeah. And I would say that I get what you're saying about him being able to walk through the street, but he's walking through the street during a terrorist event. You know, like, I mean, if
but
you
even
want to call
afterwards,
it that.
Even afterwards, in front of all the senators. And
oh,
stuff.
You're saying no one's like coming up and arresting him?
Yeah, like he's walking through all the police. He walks by the when Sam and Bucky walk away, we notice that he walks back to like go by the reporters and all that.
Yeah, that's fair. I think maybe that's a fair catch. I think maybe the idea would be that there's so much going on that it's just not really at the front of anyone's mind. And also, like, there are really only so many people that would enforce that, right? Like, it's not, like, yeah, I guess certain military figures would.
True.
But, like, a random cop isn't going to be like, hey, I've got orders to make sure that you don't walk around in a Captain America uniform.
But even not thinking of it as practically as you are right now, it's kind of a metaphor that he's able to just walk around without, you know, like Isaiah, being a black man, was not just not able to walk around. He ended up being tortured and tested and felt like he had to run away and hide. So that's even a different dynamic. Even if I'm not literally seeing somebody arrest John Walker.
Right.
You can tell that John Walker is not like feeling the stress of like, oh, what if they see me in this outfit?
No, that's a great word. Because also, unlike Walker, Isaiah did nothing wrong, right? I mean, he was basically... Right. Punished for 3 decades for nothing, other than, you know,
he did eventually break his own people out, though. He did break his own crew out. That was the one thing that was quote unquote wrong. But he was doing it because it's not morally wrong, but you know what I'm saying? In the government's eyes, it was wrong.
Right. But again, I mean, the irony being that Steve Rogers, in some ways, I mean, he was just following in Steve's footsteps almost exactly.
Those complexities make it really interesting, though.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, I think you're totally right. I think I felt that more, less in the fact that he's able to walk around in the moment in that battle, and more that he's able to just be like, well, I won't be Captain America, but I'll be U.S. agent. And I just get to kind of keep doing my thing. I just don't get like the cooler version of the shield. And that is where, yeah, I mean, he kills someone on camera, you know, in this really vicious and highly public way. And it's not as though the government's like, that's totally fine, because they did strip him of his title and everything. But you get the sense that, yeah, he's going to be able to kind of continue. I mean, he's not in that final scene he has with Val and his wife. It's not like they're in some like secret base bunker. Like, I mean, you get the sense that he's just kind of...
Right, he's in the same courtroom.
Right, he's just out kind of doing his own thing now. And yeah, that's so different. That's a really good point.
Okay, but the other thing about Walker's character that we have to talk about briefly is, to both you and I, it appears pretty obvious that they're trying to make it seem that this serum is not just taking the character defects or... character positives of Walker and enhancing them, but it seems like they're also making the serum have a defect itself. Because when I rewatched it, like, why else have Walker act kind of aloof at times and have these like eye flinching moments where he's like trying to shake something out of his brain? Right. And one of our listeners brought up again that he was bleeding out of his ears in a previous episode. Uh-huh. I'm pretty sure they're making it seem like the serum is messing with his brain, and at times he's having to like fight against that. Like when he decides to go catch the SWAT vehicle from falling off the edge, that was like him having to like overcome what the serum is doing to his brain.
Yeah.
So while I like that he got a little bit of redemption here and did the right thing at times, I still think it's going to be interesting to track as his brain kind of maybe deteriorates. That's what I think's about to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
because I said this to you on the Instagram Live.
Uh-huh.
Like, if they have him come back in the next iteration of seeing him, right? And he's just like totally normal, I think I'll be weirded out because I'll be like, there wasn't enough ramifications. Like, why didn't you go through any of that process?
Right.
Like, what's going on? And I think I'll look back on this finale and say, his acting is a little weird here then.
Yeah.
Like, the way he's like, I'm back, baby, and the flinches, and like, okay, and like, he's just kind of like, it's a little off.
Yeah. No. And so that seemed-
if he's playing a fully healthy character, then he's doing a weird job of it, if that makes sense.
And I would think that has to be a conscious choice, because contrast the way we saw him, not just fighting in those moments that you're talking about, but yeah, even in that moment when he's getting the US agent costume, contrast that with the first time he walks out on that football field and does that interview and is so polished and like so kind of likable in that certain way. Yeah, I mean, I it has to be a choice. And I think in some way, you know, I've loved what we've kept coming back to, that these shows keep giving us these sort of origin stories for these characters. And with Walker, you know, it makes more sense since this was the show that introduced him. But I was expecting this to kind of be Walker from the get-go, because in the comics, you always get the sense that Walker's a little off. Like, he's too intense. He's too violent. He follows these orders in this kind of obsessive way. But then sometimes he has this rebellious streak that's not like Steve's, where it's like, I've got to follow my moral code. It's more like that kind of tug that you saw there between, do I do the thing, like my own kind of vendetta, or do I do the thing that I know is right? So I kind of love that it's ending with that character being the character that I recognize from the comics, because that really is how you differentiate him from Steve Rogers, ultimately. Like, there are more subtle things that we've talked about through the whole show. But yeah, I mean, otherwise, he's out there and he's a soldier and he's mostly a good guy, but he's just intense. But yeah, I think now, the really interesting thing that we kind of touched on in that live stream as well is, I think that to the extent we see some kind of Dark Avengers, Thunderbolts type thing emerge from this, that one, I think that Val is going to be a big part of that. And like you said, is maybe going to be the Nick Fury to any coming group of super people. But also, I think, in that series, there are a couple of folks that are, they think they're doing the right thing, but they're just kind of being manipulated into it. So it's not that they're making the choice to be like Dark Avengers. They think that they're just Avengers, but the people that are leading them are twisting it. And I could,
interesting,
he's in a position now to be like very, very easily manipulated, because you can even see, like, he's like a little kid whenever he gets that new outfit and the new title. And so you could totally see Val, you know, just pointing him in a direction and saying, you know, like, go kill these people, and him being like, absolutely happy to, and him thinking he's doing the right thing.
Right. I like that dynamic. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I think it adds something kind of interesting to look for.
Okay. So after Walker's conclusion, we also still have Bucky's conclusion here, which again, I guess, was a source of some controversy here for some people online. It's another character that I really enjoyed how they wrapped up his story in this show, keeping in mind that I don't think his story is done forever. Mm-hmm. But for the show, I think we got what we wanted. And here's what I literally wrote. Like, on the second watch, I was thinking, what more would you want from Bucky? I wrote down, in this episode, he's powerful physically. You actually watch him fight. You watch him use his arm to break open the truck. Like, he's powerful. I wrote, he's funny in this. I thought that he had two lines that made me laugh out loud. When he first said, it's a great app, to the Flag Smashers, made me laugh out loud. And I love that twist personally. And then I literally laughed out loud that after the entire moving speech from Sam, he said the best line of the show was, sorry, I was texting and all I heard was black man, stars and stripes. That made me laugh out loud. I loved it. So I thought he's powerful. He was funny. He was cool. I didn't think it was overacted. I thought his leather jacket was dope. Him flying off the motorcycle was dope. Like, he was a cool guy.
Right.
And then he was clever. I thought they made him clever with the phone app thing and how he maneuvered around some of those situations. Right. And then lastly, I think it was still the appropriate amount of emotional. I think it makes sense that he is proud of Sam, that he keeps his mouth quiet when Sam is giving the speech, that he still is kind of the sidekick that way, but then he also got his closure with Yuri, and that scene where he's explaining his son was moving to me. So I don't really understand the complaint with Bucky.
Yeah. So I heard actually similar complaints with Bucky and with Zemo, who we can kind of just talk about briefly here as well. And the reason that I'm okay with both of those is I totally agree with everything you just said. And two, I think that part of the reason I agree is because we talked about this a lot last week. I thought that Bucky sort of had his real moment of resolution and realization in that final scene in episode 5. Like, that was sort of the moment where he understood what he needed to do, like what the work would actually look like and what it would mean to turn the page, so to speak. And what we saw here was, one, him coming back into the fight with a lot more confidence, I thought. There wasn't that sort of self-doubt that, like, am I really still the Winter Soldier? And we see that
right,
in the conversation
he has with
Carly.
Right, or might I lose control and do something terrible?
Right. Well, because he really voices that. And again, I think this is the stuff that people might be overlooking. Yes, he didn't have, like, a huge, long, like, epilogue moment in this episode, which my wife would say is great because she thinks that movies and shows now are too obsessed with epilogue type scenes of like, and this is where they are in the future, like 2 months after the events of the movie.
And I
think that in this sense, yeah, like we see now that he's kind of come full circle at the end of episode 5, and then we see now what it looks like for Bucky to no longer be kind of crippled the way that he has been, to the point where he can even kind of talk to Carly out of his experience without it being such a raw thing. And the reason I feel the same way about Zemo is we kind of had a big moment in the conversation between him and Bucky there in episode 5 as well. And so I think the only lingering thread, like, yes, I'm with everyone. Like, I love Daniel Brühl. I love seeing more Zemo. But I also think that just because I love a character doesn't always mean that I want to see or need to see more of them all the time. Like, I think that doesn't always service the story. And that goes back to, like, you know, we had folks reaching out about this billboard that went up in L.A. about people wanting to bring Tony Stark back. And you and I both love Tony Stark. We both love Robert Downey Jr. I love every time he's on screen. I don't think he needs to come back to the MCU. I think that hurts the stories that have been told. So I think that there's a difference between, oh, I wanted more of this because you like the actor and you like the character, and I wanted more of this because you think that the story calls for it.
Okay, on the Zemo front, that to me is crazy because the fact that we got a scene is such a game changer because I was totally anticipating there not being a scene at all. Like, the end of his story was last episode when they said, we're taking him to the raft where he'll spend the rest of his days. But then to get a scene means that he still has some level of influence.
Right.
So the fact that you even see him with the car blowing up and everything, by the way, his butler doing it is crazy. Because
right.
One of our listeners pointed out, what if the butler is the power broker a long time ago? And he wasn't, but it was funny that he's the one that actually was willing to do that.
Right.
But the fact that we even saw a scene means that he still could be out there in some way. Like, he's rescuable or he has contact with other people in some way. So I don't even know that his story is over now, whereas I thought it was over before. So if you had the complaint about Zemo being a letdown, you should have had that last week. This
right.
week shouldn't have made it worse. It should have made it better if that's what you were feeling.
And yeah, I thought that it was just the perfect conclusion to kind of the reminder that Zemo is still following this kind of thesis statement for his life, which is like, there shouldn't be super soldiers. Like, that's what we saw him being,
right.
you know, kind of obsessed with from day one. And I really like the way that scene was executed, I thought was really perfect because it's the kind of double twist of they're getting in, you think they're going to the raft, and then the guard is like, you know, one world, one people, and you're like, and there was a part of me in that moment that went back to that conversation you and I had where we were like, I hope at the end of this, there aren't all these super soldiers running around. And whenever I saw that, I was like, oh, like they're leaving this door open. And I don't really love that because like, what more can these, like random Flag Smasher characters, with the exception of Dovich, RIP, really add to this overarching narrative? Like, I just don't love the idea that they're out there. And I love that, like, right as soon as that thought crossed my mind, the truck explodes, and then you see the flash to Zemo. I thought that was really, really well done.
Dovich, no! It'll be interesting to track now if every time we get an interview, if the character dies the next episode. Yeah. Like, maybe that can become the Friends from Work curse. Like, go on the show, your character's done. I 100% agree, and I really liked that. And if you noticed, I even thought when in the post-credit scene when Sharon says, well, the serum's off the table, I almost felt like that was them addressing what we've always talked about, which is, will the serum get a little tiring if they don't close the door on it eventually? Mm-hmm. And I feel like now it's officially closed. We see that the one serum that is left has a catch. The other serums were destroyed, and the other people that had the serum are now dead.
Yep.
And then they even gave us the verbal confirmation of that with Sharon. Back to Bucky. Let me rewind a second. I really thought the heartfelt note to the therapist was a nice little touch there.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that. And I think that for those of you who felt like Bucky left some things unresolved, I felt like that conversation with Yuri was even more important than we saw. And let me point out a few things. One, I think when he had that conversation with him, I think we're led to believe that there was more talking than what we just saw. I don't think he just said those like six lines and then left. So I think, first of all, they worked out some more stuff. But when you think about from Bucky's perspective of going to therapy and to counseling and like the things they've been counseling him to do, I feel like between last episode and this episode, we've finally seen for the first time ever a Bucky who is fully at peace and worked through those things. Like, remember I talked about how we saw him be able to sleep at Sam's house the last episode. Well, I think the line of him saying, your son was murdered, first of all, addressing what actually happened, then saying, by the Winter Soldier, and he could have just ended it right there. But then he said, and that was me. That's important because he's admitting, I did murder him.
Yeah.
But then I think it's also important that he adds, I didn't have any choice. It's like an acceptance of, I did these awful things, but it was my fault because I did them, but it's not my fault in the fact that I couldn't have changed it. I was mind controlled. It's not my choice. Like, I can move on from that guilt and shame because it's not me anymore. Like, that's not, like, I didn't do it willingly. So I think that dialogue right there was so important. That was the closure of him finally moving on from all his past, like his past shame of Winter Soldier. And I think the fact of him saying the words, the Winter Soldier, is like him embracing that. Like, I can say that without it causing me trauma anymore.
Right.
The words Winter Soldier. So I thought it was actually a really beautiful scene.
Oh, I totally agree. And I think, to you know, we've talked at some point, and I'll be curious to go back and watch some of these earlier episodes about Sebastian Stan's performances, like, not always being sort of what we were expecting. But however you feel about that, his performance in this episode in general, I thought was fantastic. But in that scene was really, really good. Yeah.
That was peak Sebastian Stan there. And I love that they contrasted it with him going to visit Sam and just seeing a happy Bucky. Like, we haven't seen a happy Bucky.
Right.
Ever.
And I'm totally with you. I feel like we got exactly the lines we needed to see that he had kind of cycled through in a really powerful way. I thought it was such a strange, we had so many people write in asking this, and I had friends asking me the same thing, like, why didn't he not explain more? And I definitely get the sense that he would have sat with Yuri for however long Yuri needed him to and answered any questions he had. Like, I don't think he was just like, let me tell you, like, I'm going to talk to you for 20 seconds about your son dying and then just walk away and leave you there to sit with it. Like, I don't think that there's any sense that that's what happened. So I'm sure he explained what being the Winter Soldier meant, how he wound up in that position, like, what his life was like, what he's been trying to do since. Like, I definitely think that all of that was involved. And then, yeah, the moment of him coming back and having the sense that he can now actually connect with people, and we see him acting. Well, I mean, it's the first time since really Captain America, the First Avenger, that we've seen Bucky kind of laugh like that, that we've seen him just like be his old kind of like goofier, like lighthearted self. Like whenever he's kind of like holding up all the kids with the arm.
And talking to Sarah, by the way, during that moment.
right. And yeah, I think, you know, one thing that I could see people complaining about would be like a lack of a bigger Wakanda connection. And so I could see some people saying, well, like between Zemo and Bucky, maybe we thought that there was going to be another tie-in. And I had even said at one point that I thought there might be kind of a Wakanda thing in the mid-credits.
Really?
But the more I reflect on that again, I'm like, we've seen that though. Like we've seen Bucky end, like we ended Civil War with Bucky and Wakanda. Like the final end credit scene of Black Panther was Bucky and Wakanda. Infinity War starts with Bucky and Wakanda. And then earlier in the show, Bucky reaches out again to folks from Wakanda. Like I think that we've gotten a lot of that. That's not really what the show is about, as much as I love Wakanda.
And just from their perspective, they were just there to get Zemo. That's what they wanted, because Zemo was the one that had the problem. They're not going to like literally get involved in every single world issue, period. Like I know their borders are open, but you can't expect them to show up every single time as if like they're watching everybody, you know? Right. I think they got their closure when Bucky didn't shoot Zemo and turned him in. Mm-hmm. I don't see that. You know, one of our listeners said that Bucky's story was trash. And I was just like, I would love to know what you were expecting to happen here then, I guess, from him. Like, what are you wanting from him? The only thing I would say that could have maybe been a fun change, and this is the most minor detail ever, is at the very end when they changed the title to be Captain America and the Winter Soldier, which is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I would be open to the idea of them also of changing Winter Soldier to something. Like Captain America and Bucky, or Captain America and the White Wolf, or I don't know what, but, and again, I'm fine with Winter Soldier, but I could see you being like, okay, if Sam got his change, I think we also got Bucky's change. I do think we did, but maybe still saying the Winter Soldier is again reflective of what I just said, which is that he's okay with saying that name and realizing he's not that person anymore.
I think it might be the difference between Sam taking on a new responsibility and a new symbol that is Captain America. Whereas, yeah, I think Bucky, one, I mean, I think the practical reality is that like Bucky is still the Winter Soldier in the comics. In those comics, he is Captain America for a while that we've talked about, but then he reverts back to the Winter Soldier. So I think like IP wise, Marvel's going to want to keep that kind of in sync. But I think the story explanation there is, yeah, what you're saying. Like, I think he's kind of, he's reclaiming that title. And I don't think, like, I know people talked about like the White Wolf, and I like that. Like, I like the way that was used to the extent Bucky was in Wakanda, but that's a very specific character in the Black Panther mythology. And I don't know that we want to attach that long-term to Bucky.
No, I don't think it works as well outside of that context. No doubt. Right. The last thing we have to talk about is Sam's development here.
Yes.
And I loved 90% of this. So let's just start there.
Okay.
I love 90% of it. I thought the action in general was really, really fun. I had seen a critique of the action. That's one thing I can't get behind. And that's coming from a guy who's looking for this stuff. Like I said, outside of episode 2, where I felt like the CGI was a little bit off, this show has been on par with other movies as far as the action goes. I thought it was again fun to see how Sam can use his wings in different ways to fight with this new suit, which looked dope.
Especially with the shield.
Yes, right. And then the helicopter takedown scene, are you kidding me? Was so cool to me.
Yeah.
And I just thought in general the action was well paced, well thought out, and well choreographed and executed.
And it just looked really good. Yeah, I'm
with
you.
And it looked good.
Yeah, I was having a blast watching this episode. And yeah, the action was just like, this is one of those things for me, this has nothing to the quality of this episode relative to other Falcon Winter Soldier or WandaVision episodes. But I think it was just so fun to watch, and there were so many cool character moments that this, I think, is going to be one of the more, like, rewatchable single episodes for me. Like, I think it was just a lot of fun to watch.
Bold. There he goes. I know, bold I know. Statement. Look, it's look, out
I
get, there.
I made like, four caveats there, so I definitely,
yeah,
like,
yeah, that's true.
Tamped down the boldness. But I...
It was
no,
just
I,
a me- I, it was a mediocre take.
I think it's a lukewarm.
Yeah.
To our point earlier about the WandaVision finale, the moments that I loved about the WandaVision finale really had very little to do with the fighting. Like, I liked the moment that culminated in her taking the suit, like you're talking about, and I liked some of the Vision fights, but I liked more the conversations that came out of those. Like, I didn't have massive complaints about the action, but I was never really looking for that from that show. But these Fair. Action scenes, like what you're saying, just were like the kind of, like, to me, they were on par with some of the action that we've talked about from the movies. Like, you know, you've talked about how there is kind of a gap a lot of the time. And we talked about that with WandaVision and with some of those early Falcon Winter Soldier episodes. And I'm not saying that this is like final battle of Endgame level, but I think that it was in the same universe as like Winter Soldier, which I think still has some of the really great action scenes of the MCU. So I was really, really happy with it on that level.
No doubt. By the way, if you're ever going to say action scenes, like, bring up Winter Soldier, Civil War, or Infinity War as like the pinnacle of the action scenes. Okay. Endgame does things really well, and that last scene is unbelievable, but you're not strictly watching it for the action like you are some of the other stuff. Anyways, off my soapbox. One other quick side note, then we'll keep diving into Sam. I really thought Henry Jackman did a good job with the music across the entire series here. If you noticed, the entire beginning of this episode was very Hans Zimmer, Dark Knight, like, movie score.
Yeah.
While they're like loading up, which was very appropriate, I thought. The only complaint I would have with the music the entire time is I, kind of like Spider-Man, was just not really moved by Sam's theme. Like I said, every other musical bit here I loved. So just, I don't know. Hold on. We're not going to get into that. Just as a side note, I'm tossing it out there. They're like when Sam catches the SWAT vehicle from falling and it plays this huge triumphant moment, It doesn't do it for me. That's not the theme. Now, again, I'm fine with you sticking with the theme so that later I can, you know, reap the benefits. But if I had to choose, that's not my favorite theme. But the other music was incredible, including the closure Bucky was getting. The music that was playing underneath that, the inspirational music, was so cool to me. So shout out Henry Jackman. I thought you did a great job on The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Back to Sam, really quickly. Not only was the action good, I think when I look back at this series, and we're going to talk about this in a couple weeks when we reflect on it, but I think I'm going to remember most about Sam's character growth into this mature leader. I think that's the most important part, is like, even when he's fighting, it's no longer the goofy sidekick Sam. It is like, he doesn't want to fight Carly. Like, he's resisting that. And even how he talks to his enemies, and how he uses the shield, and then when he gets a chance to speak, what he says. I think I'm going to look back and remember enjoying the growth they gave him to become this mature version of himself.
I agree. It's such a different kind of arc than Wanda had. But I think that we have
very different there,
but very similar moments of kind of them fully realizing their potential. And for Sam, I think in so many ways that's, you know, this show did a really good job of showing what we all kind of knew coming into it, which is that Sam and Bucky were both kind of living in the shadow of Steve Rogers, and both had to figure out, like, you know, Sam ends up turning the shield in because he feels like, for a variety of reasons that the show, I think, did a good job of exploring, that he couldn't live up to that. And Bucky, you know, feels like he doesn't really know who he is apart from Steve in a lot of ways, because he needs Steve to kind of tell him that he's a good man. But I liked that this was not, you know, it was very in keeping with the message that we saw from Sam, where he's like, you know, sorry, Steve's gone. And it doesn't really matter what he thinks. Like, there's like, you can respect what Steve Rogers was and his contributions, but Sam is now like, he is Captain America, not in a way that has to follow the model from Steve Rogers. And I think we saw that in some really cool ways, most notably to me, whenever he's having that fight with Carly and she knocks him down and says, stay down. It's setting you up, right, to think that he's going to say, I can do this all day.
I can do this all day.
But instead, he just says no and just gets back up. And it's just a different, like, it was kind of a moment of all of us being, okay, is this, because it would be cool if they do that. But I think it's even cooler that it's like, no, he's not just going to pretend to be, like, he's not going to be imitation Steve Rogers now. Like, it's more than that, and it's bigger than that.
I also noticed that on the line when he says, this boy has earned the ass whooping he's about to get. Like, that is not something Steve Rogers would have ever said, you know?
Right.
So I'm with you. I was noticing little areas that they were intentionally making him different than Steve.
Yeah. And just the confidence that I don't think Sam has ever had. Like, we've talked about these lines for the longest time. Like, what's interesting is Steve never, like, we never heard Steve refer to Sam in kind of sidekicky language. Sam always referred to himself that way. You know, like, there were always these lines we got of him just kind of being self-deprecating and I'm just doing whatever he does, but slower, like, yada, yada. And I like that. I like that now he, like, has such a confidence that he himself has something to bring to the table just by his own merit.
Like when he says, you're damn right, I'm Captain America. Like, that's the confidence he didn't have before.
Right.
Let's talk about his final speech, because I have such mixed feelings on this. There was so much about it that I liked. I thought the actual dialogue was well thought out. I thought the visual of him flying in with Carly was so cool, but then using Carly as the catalyst to start that speech and change their mind was really powerful. And I really liked the shots of John Walker and Bucky in those moments when he's giving the speech, because it felt very much like Steve Rogers, like an Endgame when Steve Rogers is doing the whatever it takes speech and it cuts to Rocket or Iron Man. They give you those faces to show you, like, okay, we understand this is like a cheesy speech, but that's what they do so well. Like, if the rest of us did it, it'd be cheesy, but for them, it's believable. Because, like, in Steve Rogers' case, he is truly that good-hearted that it's not cheesy. It's just, it's actually him. It's believable. Right. Whereas it'd be forced from somebody else. And I think we got that here with Sam, too. You know what I mean by that? Like, he is
totally
so good-hearted that this is the way he can inspire change. And I loved all that.
Well, it's even kind of a callback to the end of Winter Soldier, right? Which is kind of the first time we get that sort of, like, rousing speech from Steve. And, you know, afterwards, Sam is like, did you write that down or was that just all off the top of your head?
Right.
And it's kind of cool that, now he's the one that is really inspiring everyone. And without, you and I haven't really talked about this a ton. I've heard from folks that thought the speech was too long, that they thought it was too on the nose, and that the whole thing just felt like a little preachy. I just want to say, and then we can go into that if those are any of the concerns you had. I was aware that it was long. I was aware that it was going on longer than it normally would have. For me, that's one of the beauties of this format. I like that these shows allow us to dig a little bit deeper and spend a little bit more time in moments that the movies wouldn't. Like, I think in a movie, that probably would have been like a 30, 40 second scene at most. And here it was probably closer to, like, you know, a minute and a half or 2 minutes of him talking.
I also think it probably would have had to be that length. I mean, if he had just walked up there for 30 seconds and said, you need to stop doing this, and they did, I'd be like, okay, that was a really fast reversal. I feel like there had to be some discussion there. So
the
length itself never bothered me. And we talked about this in the live stream. It was very poignant. We've never had a movie or a show in this universe talk so on the nose with today's current issues. Like, I was watching the episode yesterday, and I was thinking, man, like, there was so much about the meeting being stormed that felt like the storming of the Capitol that just happened here in America, right, like a couple months ago.
Right.
And then there's a lot of the race stuff that we're talking about and dealing with here in America. And now they're talking about on the show and dealing with it in the MCU. Well,
yeah,
and then the end speech being so poignant about refugees and just like really on the nose. And so like, that's not debatable. It is the most on the nose we've ever had. Oh, and the vaccines even, and that being the pandemic being a scrap storyline, you know, like there's a lot that was, this was really on the nose.
Well, no, for sure. I mean, even the fact that this came out like the week of the Derek Chauvin trial, you know, is just like there is a lot that like no one could have timed, but it is really speaking to kind of where we are as a country. And what I think I appreciated about it is, and this is why, and then I'll kind of turn it back over to you because I'm curious to hear your any negative thoughts you had on this. But like, to me, I thought that it was interesting because it was bigger than just exploring like some of the stuff that folks were saying was on the nose. Like, yes, they're obviously dealing with race in a way that I think they sort of had to, but also I just appreciate Disney for being willing to do in a way that I thought, I mean, yes, it's like what Desmond was saying when he was on, like, are they like radically changing the conversation? No, but this is a massively seen event, you know, and I think to take several minutes out of that and to just kind of sit down and address some of these issues that are really facing everyone, I thought was a really cool thing. But beyond that, I just thought that it was a really powerful way of tying it into Endgame, which is what we've always talked about, more so than I think anything else really has in either of the two shows, or in some ways even more so than Far From Home. To me, the way that he talks about, you know, if there's anything that you learn from the snap, it's what it feels like to be powerless. And now you know what so many people around the world feel like every day. And you are in this situation, like you are the one with the Thanos power over so many other people, and you've never realized it. And if nothing else, like this should be a moment for you to understand that and for that to kind of change the way that you make decisions. And I've never heard or thought about them tying in what Thanos did in those kinds of terms. But I thought that that was really bold storytelling and just like a really, really poignant way, even apart from the current event side of it, to kind of make the consequences of Endgame again hit on a new, even deeper level.
By the way, the senator that he's talking to needs to go. I'm so fed up with that guy. Golly, he's got a punchable face. You just don't understand how complicated it is, Kyle. Yeah, I'm like, okay, you know what, bro? Who do you think you are? Okay, just back down a little bit. My concerns were mostly minor. But first of all, next time when we are reviewing this show and rating it, I felt like in general, the show had a little bit of cheese factor that barely, by the way, but a little bit that some of the other stuff didn't have. Like the Russo brothers, when they direct a movie, you get this similar type of emotion that is achieved in a slightly less cheesy way.
Right.
Like, so I'm not like concerned that Sam was talking about issues directly on the nose that are affecting us. I'm fine with that. But just the way he starts having that conversation in front of cameras, in front of microphones, so, and everyone happens to be watching TV. Like, I'm not saying it's not realistic, but it just is a little bit of a cheesy, it's a little bit of like an Elf way to finish it, you know, like that you sing for everyone to hear, and just a little bit.
That's fair. I think it's sort of like you talk about the Capitol. Like, I think everyone wound up turning their TVs on.
People would be watching at this point.
Right.
Yes.
You know,
I get that. That's what I'm saying. I understand all the other arguments. I'm just saying a little bit. It's like some of the slow-mo stuff, some of the shots in this entire series have been a little cheesier. I don't even think WandaVision had that kind of cheese factor.
No. I'll recognize that for sure. I'll go there.
The second thing is I understand that it was a very moving and powerful speech, and I was moved by it, and I loved it. I liked the joke that Bucky gives afterwards. I liked the reactions, all that, and I loved hearing it from Sam. I felt like, just ever so slightly, it felt a little not realistic that Sam could just change their minds right there with a speech with very little debate about it, as if like they were just missing what Sam had said about it. Now, I think the devil's advocate would be they also just went through a traumatic experience that probably opened their eyes a little bit.
Well, but I just would say
ever so slightly, it felt unrealistic, especially given our current political climate and how people dig their heels in and don't change their minds.
Well, I'm with you there. I think to me, the reason I didn't think about it that way, I thought about it more as Sam being the catalyst for like a groundswell of popular opinion, right? And that we have seen happen. And so I took that moment to be more everyone seeing Sam, they're kind of hearing the truth, and the people that maybe aren't even fully aware of what this vote is going to do, like what the consequences of that are for people that the Flag Smashers are representing. I think that that is what ultimately leads to the change, like, because I think once public opinion is not on your side, that's when these things finally shift. So that's what I took that to be. Not so much that Sam has just such an inspirational speech that it's changing the policy, but that he is inspiring people to change it themselves in some ways.
Good word. That's fair. That's not how I perceived it, but that makes sense. Okay. Yeah. Love it. We can just come. Look at this. Look at us. Just bro hugging each other through the microphone here. Lastly, I think the suit in general was a little bit of a letdown for me. I don't know if that's controversial. I think I was a little bit more sold on the Wakanda front being involved. Could have been a really cool idea. Like, I know they made him a suit, but it would have been cool to have some Wakanda tech or be vibranium or something of that nature. And maybe the wings are made out of vibranium, because we talked about how they didn't get crushed here ever. And that's how he's able to like reflect bullets and stop the helicopter, et cetera. I get that. I think it could have been a little more for me. I know they were following a comic imagery thing. So that makes sense to me. But then also when he's given that speech, take off the goggles. Like, the goggles make him look a little goofy, and I understand they have practical purpose, but I would have loved to see that scene where he didn't have those goggles on. Like, and then I was watching and going, I don't know how he gets those on or off, because it's not just like a helmet. It's like kind of part of the suit. So maybe he can't physically take them off very easily. They have to be cut off him. I don't know. But that's a minor critique, but I was kind of hoping for just a teeny bit more from the suit.
No, that's fair. And look, I mean, it's not that I felt super strongly about it one way or the other. The very first moment that we saw it, whenever he burst through the window with the shield, I thought it was a really, really fun moment. Like, I, in the moment, was very excited to see it. And part of that is me having read a lot of those comics, and they did kind of, like, perfectly reproduce that.
Sure.
But for me,
contrast that to how I felt when I saw Wanda's suit for the first time. I brought it up in the episode like 100 times. Like, the suit itself got me so freaking jazzed. Like, I was so excited to see her power, mainly because of what she looked like there. Whereas this, I was like, okay, the suit's fine. I just don't have the same feeling at all.
Yeah, that's fair. Part of me doesn't.
That's all.
Part of me thinks that there was no way that it would feel as epic as Wanda's.
The goggles. Get rid of the goggles.
Right. But even then, like, I'm with you, and I'm not necessarily defending it. I just don't know that, like, I don't know that Sam wearing a suit with wings was ever going to look as cool as like Wanda, that moment of like epically realizing her powers.
Sure.
And you know,
look, it's a minor thing. It's
no,
tiny.
For sure.
I liked it.
I do
just
think
the suit itself wasn't inspiring the same reaction. That's
no, for sure. But two final things there. One, I do think, and if this isn't the case, then I'm going to be a little bit disappointed and a little bit confused. I do think we're supposed to assume that whole suit is made out of vibranium, because what else would the Wakandans have used? Like, that the whole idea is like all of their tech is based in vibranium. So it seems like they would have to kind of go out of their way to make something that's not that. Like, I think that's why Bucky, you know, like...
It probably wasn't made out of gilded and cotton.
Right. Like, I think... So that does make it kind of fun, because then I think that at that point, like, Sam... The question there is, like, what I was wondering, like, Sharon, you know, shoots Carly before she can shoot Sam. And my thought was she would have had to, like, shoot him in the face almost, because, like, that's the only unexposed area, if that is the case. But I guess we'll see. I'm sure that they'll let us know at some point if, because, like, last night I also brought up, like, his Red Wing vibranium, because he should be, because he's always getting, like, shot out of the sky. But the other thing I was going to say, and I saw some folks say this online, I do feel like this suit will probably get some tweaks the way that Caps did. Like,
yeah, agreed.
You know, like, especially, I talked about this all the time, and you always, weirdly, I am still way more bothered by Cap suit and Avengers.
Yeah, you're the suit guy.
and that's why I think it's funny, because I think that, like, it's crazy to me that that suit doesn't bother you, but that this one does. Because I still think that his Avenger suit is just one of the worst costumes that Marvel Studios has ever done.
I rewatch it now, I get bothered by it because you brought it up and poisoned my mind.
Okay, there you go. But then once you see, like, you know, once he comes back in Winter Soldier, and then really Age of Ultron is when they figure out what his, like, actual look should be. And I think we'll probably have that. Like, I bet they'll kind of listen to some feedback and tweak it, and we'll get, like, the same suit, but with some slight additions. And I heard some folks say that, like, the ears, the way the costume is, like, draws too much attention to his ears and, like, the goggles. And I bet that's some stuff that we might see sort of massaged and made a little bit stronger.
Yeah, no doubt. It was a minor thing for me. I'm excited to see how they tweak it. In general, I had a lot of fun watching the finale. I like that it's been made as, like, an event again. You and I were talking off air. It'd be really fun if Disney would start releasing these at, like, 7 p.m. on Friday instead of 2 a.m. Because it'd be so much fun to watch it like it was network television again. We're all watching at 7 because you can do it. And I know there's so much more business stuff that probably goes into why they put it out at 2. But I think just take the next step and put it out in the evening. That'd be so much fun, I think, for all of us to watch it together like we did with our watch party. I have a lot more big picture thoughts, like some reflection questions that I'm going to save for when we come back to this in a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. Because I think there's still some really fun things to discuss as far as where is the MCU going forward and, like, big picture things on these Disney Plus shows versus the movies, etc. But we'll come back to that. Here's what we're going to do, guys. And don't freak out on us, okay? Robbie and I, friends from work, are taking a 2-week break. So for 2 Mondays, you are not going to have a Friends from Work episode in your podcast home folder, whatever. What would you even call that? I don't know. But you're not going to have one. But
in your feed.
Guys, that's because we're actually working on ramping up for Loki, okay? So we have some fun content coming after that. And I'm going to be using the 2 weeks to recharge so I can give you everything I have for the next set of episodes, but also working on some merchandise. I think I can say at this point that merchandise is coming in the next month or so. So be on the lookout for that. But for 2 weeks, we are not going to have an episode. But then when we come back after those 2 weeks, we're going to do a Falcon and Winter Soldier big picture reflection like I'm talking about. And that's where we will rank this episode. Mm-hmm. You guys will find out where we have it sitting in our overall rankings. And again, discuss some of the big picture things going forward for the MCU.
So yes, we will be taking a quick break. But in the meantime, we will still be around on social media at the FFW Podcast. You can always go back and get caught up on our old episodes. We have the full rewatch, which we'll be talking about some ahead of Loki as we kind of talk about the best way to prepare for that. And you can always find us at the FFWpodcast.com to either look at our rewatch order there and find those episodes, or to reach out to us that way via email. Either way, we're super grateful for all of you having been here through WandaVision and now Falcon Winter Soldier. We're having so much fun, and we feel like it's really only just getting started. We can't wait to show you some of the stuff that we have planned around Loki. So we will look forward to that, to seeing you guys in a few weeks, right back here on Friends from Work.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90 exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.